Okay, everybody. This is the Women Truckers Network. It is a feature of the Real Women in Trucking Driver Organization. You can find us on Facebook by searching Real Women Truckers. On YouTube and Blog Talk Radio, you can search for Women Truckers Network, and we refer to it as WTN. If you're interested in being notified of our conference calls, Blog Talk Radio, and other scheduled activities, you can sign up for text alerts. We post the link on our Facebook page from time to time, and it's in our newsletter, which is through our website, www.realwomenintrucking.org. You can unsubscribe at any time. We hope that you won't, but if it becomes a bother, we want you to stop the notification. Our mission is to empower the women of trucking and those entering the industry through outreach programs, continuing education, advocacy, mentoring, networking, and ongoing support to promote retention, encouragement, and unity between both new and seasoned drivers. This is a grassroots drivers organization that has been recognized by the IRS as a 501c6 trade association. We want to thank our sponsors, U.S. Food Service, Western Pennsylvania, Altoona, Greensburg, and the Manassas, Virginia Division, Redway. They serve 11 northwestern states and one Canadian province. Tyson Foods, Bentonville, Arkansas, and Cisco Houston Division. If you look on our trucking classifieds, you're going to find some job opportunities that are available from them. We have a new advertiser. It is Republic National Distributing. They're a beverage distributor. They have many locations across the United States, and they're focusing on their Tampa terminal. So for people that think you can't get a job in Florida, that's not true. And they are just very eager to hire women drivers. They're local jobs. They pay really well. They're hourly. They're going to start featuring one of their female drivers that just came in from OTR to do local delivery work, and she is just loving it. And I said, please do a profile on her. We want to share with you a promotional offer from Trucker's Edge powered by the Dat Load Bar. You can use promo code 584 for 1 free month, and you can find more information on our website. And membership is now available to our organization. In the past, we've always just given free information, but we're trying to support this project. So we give a free membership for students and for mission support sponsors. You don't have to be a driver. You just support our mission. Experienced, seasoned female drivers, there is a membership for you. And some people have asked, why are you charging for the experienced members? Because we're hoping that you would feel the love to bring these other women in and help them. And to help them, it takes funds for us to have the time and the energy and to pay for the website and to pay for the Blog Talk Radio and so forth and the printed materials to do that. So, you know, there's really no free lunches. Somebody's paying for it somewhere. So that's And we would also like to remind everyone, if they're on Twitter or Facebook, please share our posts, please share our job opportunities, because the people that are on our page may not be, they could be different from the ones that are on your page, and somebody might be interested. Tonight we shared something, a good post we'd love for everyone to share, and that is remembering Bitsy Gomez. Bitsy Gomez is one of the founding members of the Coalition of Women Truckers in the late 1970s. Very few people understand that this woman existed and fought discrimination and harassed half of you today, and she's been erased from trucking history. So if you don't know the name of Bitsy Gomez, you should Google her and read about her. And she took quite a hit personally for fighting the fight that she did, but some of the quotas, the hiring quotas that are on the books today, and according to her daughters, the female bathrooms that are in truck stops today are because of this woman. So you should learn her name and learn about her work. So let's get started with the topic tonight, and that is related to BRSP. There was a huge sex harassment case that came out about shortly after I became entered trucking in 2007.
And the story is kind of fascinating because the judge threw out many of the women's complaints. The case was dismissed. It was appealed. In the case was dropped from 265 women to 35 women. Then it dropped down even further. And the women were prohibited from testifying before a jury for the main person that complained. If you read this whole case from the beginning to end, you'll see there's a lot of stuff that was really improper that happened, and you don't even need a law degree to realize there's a lot of weird stuff that went on. At the same time, there was a woman by the name of Karen Shank, and her case was filed with a private lawyer in San Bernardino County, and her complaint was heard by a jury. She won $1.5 million for her one case because a jury heard it. In the big case, with all of these women involved, the women were prohibited from speaking to a jury, so they never got their story heard. In the end, the lady that was the main person that filed the case, Monica Stark, CRST gave her $50,000, admitted no guilt, if she would just go away. So that all kind of occurred last year. The CRST tried to get the EEOC to pay them $4.5 million in court costs, saying that, you know, they judged them wrong and they all this stuff. Well, a judge panel looked at the case and turned it back over to the judge that ruled that way and said, you don't have any real reason why you made this judgment. You know, you don't have any details on it. So they sent it back to her to give real reason. And that got overturned right about December of this year, December 2014, right at the end of the year. $4.5 million. The Karen Shank case was upheld in January of 2015. So that was $4.5 million plus $1.5 million. So nearly $7 million CRST was hit with because of their way they handled women that alleged sexual harassment. But since then, we've had several people complain that they've been experiencing the same problems, like nothing has changed there. So in my experience, a lot of it is in the reporting, it's in the pre-preparation. The women that go in there, this is not on their radar. They are not trying to think about this ever happening to them. They're going there to work. They think that's all that it needs to be. And then they have some kind of issue, and they're just sort of lost in this maze of how do you report this and how do you get out of this and how do you get somebody to take action on it. So that's kind of what we wanted to talk about tonight. With that being said, there's a couple women on here. I don't recognize your names because your names come up on the console. Are you wanting to just talk about being at CRST, or are you just entering trucking and you want to know about this carrier? Nobody wants to say anything. Okay. Is there anybody on the line right now that works at CRST now? I think somebody said something. Can you say that again? The one woman that I spoke to this afternoon, I'm going to send her a text and a reminder to call in. She's one of our mentors, and she just left CRST a couple months ago. Where she said she had an issue was when they first get off the bus, and let me tell people that have never been to a training carrier how it goes. You get hired through your CDL school. You get a conditional hire letter, and you get they say, okay, we're taking you, and you get recruited, and they pay for you a bus ticket or some sort of transportation ticket. At one of these low-wage carriers, it is a Greyhound bus ticket. And you get on the bus, and you arrive at the destination, and then they take you in a shuttle to the company hotel, motel. they either own it or they contract with it. For the case of CRST, they have dorms that are at their Cedar Rapids terminal. There's two or three women per room. At Covenant Transport, they own a motel in Chattanooga, Tennessee. It's like an old Holiday Inn that's about across the highway from their main terminal, and that's where they transport everybody. In Waterloo, Iowa, for CRST, they have the top floor of a Super 8 motel. So they put all of these people, and just for anybody that wants to know, Sierra England, one of the worst carriers that there is. I've heard women say that they have 8 girls in one motel room sharing a bathroom, and it's just horrific. But basically that's what they do, and you're all living together in there, and you know, you're filling out your paperwork, you get little food cards or whatever, and you go to your orientation. In this environment, there's no supervision. You've just arrived there. In my experience and what I shared with Carol this afternoon, is it's basically a lot of people come in another room sharing their arrest record with you. It's kind of a who's who of, you know, I just got out of jail for this, and I just got out of jail for that. And she said that she had an incident with a guy who was being a little aggressive at the school. She had made friends with some other guys in the CDL training thing, and they were sort of sticking up for her. But this one guy was really super, super aggressive. And looking back, he's so aggressive that he had gone to the hotel office to try to get her room number. He had tried to push his way into an elevator with her. He had tried to get her to go to the truck and look at the trucks, you know, using these different ploys. She felt uncomfortable. She removed herself from the situation. But there really wasn't anyone there for her to tell, this person is doing some things that are super inappropriate, and I don't know who to tell that to. I know for me, I met a couple people like that, but you don't want to be reporting stuff like this when it's your new job. You're coming from a situation that you need to make money. You don't need to be making complaints. So you're trying to suck it up. You're trying to act like it's not a big deal. But this person, somebody should know that this person is this persistent and this inappropriate, so inappropriate that other men feel uncomfortable around this person. And there's no one around from the leadership, from the executive structure that could monitor that they have a growing problem there. So that's really the first part of this problem, is the new students coming in not knowing you. Tracy, I see that you just came into the room.
Yes, ma'am, I am here. I do have to run in and check in, but I want to check in with you first.
Okay. Well, Tracy, go and check in with them first.
Yeah, let me do that. And do you want me to be on hold, or you want me to call right back?
It's up to you. I can mute you. Okay, so Tracy was an expert witness in the CRST case, the original case. She was a witness for Monica Stark in the end. She works at USA Truck now. She's a mentor and a board of director for Real Women in Trucking. But it's been years since she worked there. But even in recent history, people are reporting the same stuff. There's no way to report this misconduct from day one. The students are, if something does happen, they are lost in the system. What Carol told me today, and I'm going to text her when Tracy comes back on the line to talk to people. There are some very helpful people at CRST that if they knew that you were having a problem, they would help you. But you don't know who they are. You're just off the bus. It's getting to know the lay of the land. It's getting to be connected with certain people that will help you and won't help you, and knowing that. And because you're only at orientation 3 or 4 or 5 days and you're off on a truck, it's just by happenstance that you fall upon somebody that will help you, it's like finding a needle in a haystack. And in that time, a lot of bad damage can happen to you if you don't talk to the right people. This is kind of the problem that we're seeing. They have still never made a path from the day you get off that bus to get to the right person to report to that actually will help you. They will tell you to report to your DM, which means your driver manager, but that doesn't mean that the report is going to go anywhere, because the driver manager's job is to move freight. And if you make a report, you're not going to remove freight. Their job is to motivate you to keep that truck moving, not complain. So they're always going to be saying something to you on the phone to get you to go a couple miles further. And in that couple miles further, the situation can explode. And when it explodes, it's going to come back onto you, because they're going to say, if you were that scared, why didn't you report it? Why didn't you? Because you were trying to be a team player and you didn't want to be a complainer, and it's going to come back on you. And that's the point that we really want to get across to people, is they're giving you numbers. Maybe you're not realizing that you have them in your possession. You're going to be overwhelmed with information in the first few days. You may not even know you have the magic number in that pile of papers that you have, and then something happens. So until Tracy comes back, does anybody have any remarks or questions? No. Okay. Melinda, can I ask you what's going on with your situation?
We ended up leaving Covenant, and surprisingly, or funny enough, we're over at U.S. Express, which I know is a sister company or, you know, family. We had to get out of Covenant. The trainer we had was just, it wasn't safe. I mean, obviously there were the three of us in the truck, and there was that issue. But beyond that, he was not training us. He slept more than we did. He slept, continued to sleep in the top bunk. Just the number of things. So anyway, we at one point, and it's interesting because you the comment you just made about, you know, not knowing who to talk to, or if you do say something, like, so at one point we were like, we need off the truck. We do not feel safe with this trainer any longer. And they're like, well, you know, basically they told us that if we didn't get back on the truck and finish the load, that we would never have another job, because they would basically accuse us of abandoning a load.
Right.
And so then no trucking company would hire you. And the comment that was made by our fleet manager was that, well, this is the first we're hearing of this. How come that? And we were like, no, because obviously we'd already had the issue with the canopy, with me parking under the canopy, you know, because my trainer was asleep in the top bunk. Anyway, but my fleet manager was not aware of that incident happening. Nobody ever reported that to them. So, you know, I was like, no, this is not the first time said there was an issue, but it was under threat of basically, you know, that we would be accused of abandoning a load and not being able to find another job. We were forced back onto the truck again until we got to Chattanooga, at which point then when we got off, we turned in our notice. They begged us to come back. They gave us a week to think about it. They paid us for the week, and we just said, you know, thank you very much, but we moved on. A lot of the reason we moved on was because the trainer that we had, by getting off the truck, he lost his bonus. So we cost him a significant amount of money, which our understanding was about $1,500 for the two, for each of us. So that was about $3,000 that he lost. He made quite a bit of money while we drove about 25,000 miles for the month that we were with him. And he at about 36 cents a mile. So he made about $7,000 roughly, okay, for the month that we drove for him. But we still cost him about $3,000. So our they offered to give us individual trainers, you know, one for Lauren, one for me. But who knows when that would have happened, number one. And number two, the bigger issue that we had or that we were concerned about was this trainer had been with the company for 10 years and had been a trainer for 7. And my daughter had a point. She was like, Mom, she goes, we don't know who he knows or what might happen. He can retaliate through other people. And she was like, I know they're not supposed to put us off a truck somewhere, you know, anywhere they're supposed to. But she says, if he's got friends, you know, we were just really afraid. That's what it came down to. We were afraid. We were afraid to stay with the company. And we've already put so much time and effort into learning this and developing this career that we just said, you know, we needed to go with a different company. So, unfortunately, because we're new, there's only so many companies that will hire, you know, people out of CDL school that don't have, even though we had a month's driving and what have you, we still hadn't driven by ourselves. So we're kind of going back through the same thing again with a different company. So that's kind of where we are right now. We're, you know, but my daughter is off with a trainer. I'm off with a different trainer. You know, we stay in touch. We talk. Same thing. I feel more secure. I have a better trainer this time, I think, than I've got a better trainer this time than what I had before.
Okay.
But it's only because our eyes are a little bit more open.
All right. That's good. I'm glad to hear that, you know, because I was starting to worry about you guys and stuff. And just for so people know, in my experience in, like, studying all of this, the carriers that are having this problem are the carriers that run the same business model. And the business model is running team freight with students. And so when they have, I mean, having a good team could be a married couple. They're the most successful at team driving. But Mindy is a mother and daughter, very unique, you know, a mother and daughter team. They might have an argument, but they're going to stay together, you know. So they're you know, for lifers, they're going to be a team, whether they have an argument or not. So, you know, here we got a team business model. You would think this is the ideal situation to give them the best training. But they had a training that's going straight up and down to go to sleep as soon as they got on the truck. So they've had some tribulations with that, and that's what she was explaining. So even though the topic tonight is CRST, you need to know that any carrier that has a team driving component to their training is doing the very same thing. And it doesn't have to do only with sexual harassment. It has to do with unsafe training that makes you feel like you need to get off the truck or you're going to die. And that's the bottom line. We've had some people that participate in our group that went there, and they kind of got run in the ground, and then they didn't learn how to do shifting because of their automatic truck. So they felt sort of disadvantaged, like they'd been dumbed down from the beginning, and they were kind of upset with that. So really stand your ground with this, and what you're saying is correct. People act like they're the one to report it to, but then in hindsight, they were just blowing you off. Tracy, I have you here back, and I've got your mic back on. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you all?
I'm doing great. So, Tracy, what years did you work at CRS?
I was there for 3 years.
What was it? When you went to orientation?
2003.
So you were there when all of this stuff happened. In the beginning.
Yep.
And so what was the environment? Like, when you went to orientation, what was it like? Did anybody say to you, if anything happens to you that's inappropriate during training, this is what you do to report it?
No one said anything about that. I mean, it was, you felt like nothing bad would ever happen. They didn't give you telephone numbers to call. Everything was all, your trainer will fill you in. Your trainer has these numbers. Your trainer has this information. You know, and they actually put me on a bus from Cedar Rapids, Iowa to Oklahoma City where I met up with my trainer. I get on his truck. He's already been driving all night, and here he's going to drive all day. And, you know, he has all the information. I didn't even know who to call.
Did you feel like, how did you feel when you first got in his truck and you knew that he'd been driving that much already?
It was like, well, shouldn't we take a break or something? He's like, no, we got to get to Arizona. We got to get this load delivered. I'm okay. I've got 10 years experience. This is just great. We'll be fine.
So you just kind of go with it.
Yes, yeah, I just went with it. I mean, he's supposed to be the professional. He's supposed to know what he's doing. And really, at that time, after a 12-hour bus ride, I honestly didn't really think too much about it because my brain wasn't thinking anyway.
Uh-huh.
You know,
okay.
But it got apparent that this wasn't cool. And he also... He kind of let on that he was in control of everything. And I didn't know how to get a hold of anybody, really. And when we did get to a terminal and I tried to talk to people, all that was there were mechanics. They didn't give a care what I was, you know, that I needed help or how to run a truck or how to train or anything. They didn't care. All they wanted to do was get your truck fixed, get you out of the way. So there was, like, nobody to talk to. And he kind of kept me away from other drivers and everything. He let me know he was monitoring my phone calls. And the only phone number I had to CRST was to my recruiter.
And did you ever reach out to your recruiter during that time and say, this is, like, kind of not what I expected and this is what's going on?
I tried, they did have me call the dispatcher one time, but my trainer sat right there. Now, he's already slapped me several times. He's
physically slapped you?
Yes, he's physically slapped me. He slapped me in the head because, your head is in the mirror. He slapped me on the leg because I guess he thought it was sexy or something. He tried to tell me the upper bunk did not work and that I would have to sleep with him. He would park the truck alongside the road, so he would think that I wouldn't get out of the truck at night because I was getting out of the truck and going in the truck stop versus sleeping in the same bed with him. And when he let me talk to the dispatch person, I wasn't able to say anything because he was, like, right there looking at me, and I just had a feeling that if I said something to make him look bad, he would hurt me.
Uh-huh.
And when I did finally get to say anything to anybody, he had fallen asleep from exhaustion. I snuck off. It was during the day and was able to get a hold of the recruiter. Because most of the time when he slept, it was at night, and there was nobody really manning the phone. And definitely nobody at the recruiting office.
So you wasn't able to get back with the recruiter first. Did you get an outside recruiter or was it a CRST recruiter?
It was a CRST recruiter, and it was on the truck 24 days before I got a hold of her.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And
so they're not as eager to take your phone calls after, but when you first contact them, they call you like any time, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, when
you
she was
get
trying
a hold of him
to get
in 2 seconds,
to Iowa. She called twice a week. She called during the day. She called all different times when she was trying to get me to Iowa. And I felt like once she got me to Iowa and I signed that contract, it was her job was done.
Yeah. And you say she.
Yep. I had a female recruiter.
Yeah. So just because it's a she doesn't mean it's your friend. And that's something very important for women to understand.
You are a paycheck to everybody on the other end of that phone. That's all you are, is a paycheck.
Yeah. Nobody's your friend, really.
Yep.
So then once you got to Cedar Rapids, I don't know what the dorms or the situation was when you were there. Carol was telling me about these different living situations. I know what it was like, the Covenant. They have this motel. They send you all there. You know, they've filled in cement where the pool used to be, and everybody sort of gravitates out there to talk about their arrest record and how bad they were before they came to trucking. And you're standing there going, are they really going to let these people drive trucks? Are they really going to let these people live together on trucks? I mean, you have people out there saying they were in jail for attempted murder and assault and all of this stuff. And you're like, wait a minute. This seems kind of weird to me.
And one of my co-drivers, person that I didn't know, someone they just linked me up with because his state was close to my state, was a convicted rapist. He had just gotten out of prison, and they put him on a truck with me.
And they put him on a truck with you. Because of geographical.
Yep.
That's how they match people up. Geographical and whether you smoke.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they match you up.
Yep. He lived in Indiana, and I lived in Michigan, so it was close enough.
Close enough. Did you ever team up with him?
We were on the truck together about 3 weeks. He really, you know, he was just very cold. He was a very cold person. And I would have probably never known that he had an issue, except he drove the truck into a parking lot that they were resurfacing. And they got very upset about it, so they called the police. And he told me that he was probably going to go to jail. And he explained to me it was because he went to Iowa to go to school, and they made him change his driver's license, and he had to be a registered sex offender, and now his driver's license has one address, and his registrar for his sex offending has another address.
Okay, so he definitely had something that he was trying to shield.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't really trying to protect you.
They just needed two warm bodies in the truck.
Yeah. This is another problem, is that they do team people by smoking preference and geographical. You do not have a right to know where the other person came from and what their arrest record or background information is. I believe everybody has a chance turn over another leaf in their life, but people that are sexual predators are not curable, in my opinion. It's just a matter of time. They have a problem, and they have a problem. And putting them in an isolated situation that's super heated, super intense, is not a good thing, especially with someone they can take advantage of. That's my opinion. So I feel that it's very irresponsible to put them on a truck with a woman who is completely vulnerable and trying to learn something that's completely out of their element. So I saw a lot of the same stuff like this at Covenant. You do not know who you're getting on the truck with, even some domestic violence. Why do you want to put somebody on the truck that has a temper with another person? You know, that it could get into an aggressive situation. So there's no really rhyme or reason in these carriers that are using the team business model to match people up. Once you went to orientation, you said that they didn't really instruct you how to report anything. When was the first time you had something to report?
Probably within 3 days of being on the truck.
And did you get off, or did you?
I was in the middle of Arizona. I did not know. You know, I'm one of those people that had never been away from family before in my life. I was scared to death. And if I'd have told my mom that this guy was a jerk, she would have freaked out. So I'm trying to protect my mom. And so I just told myself, well, as long as he doesn't get too out of hand, I can handle this. I just got to deal with this for 28 days. As long as he doesn't force me into anything, I can deal with this for 28 days. The first indication that I had that I was in trouble was day three. We go into a Love's to get a shower, and he tells me I have to shower with him. And I said, no, I'll just wash up in the ladies' room. Thank you very much. The clerk happened to hear the conversation, and she's like, oh, honey, I'll give you your own shower. And so he got mad about that. So that was really the first time I realized I'm in trouble. But I didn't know who to go to, because if I call my mom, who's the only one I had at the time, she's going to be very, very upset and not know what to do either. And basically, you have to figure out how to get home. And there's one thing that takes to get home, and that's money. And when you're just starting out as a student, you don't have any money. You know, my mom didn't have any money. So I'm like, you know, if I bail, I'm going to be stuck here in Arizona. The next time I was in Wyoming, I'm going to be stuck in Wyoming. So, you know, I had no idea that if I called the company that they would get me home, although I had heard horror story after horror story about students being dropped at truck stops, students being dropped alongside the road, you know, and so I still didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's kind of the big thing is that we want to talk about here tonight is life after this case. There's so many people that reported the same thing that you experienced, and I experienced it a totally different scenario. Hold on. It went away. Shoot. What was puzzling to me when I started like digging into this is what was happening to me at Covenant was happening at CRST, and it was happening at all these other carriers that do the same business model, like almost verbatim, but I never even met these people before, and I didn't work for the same company. So that in itself seems like it's a problem. They don't teach you how to report something. Now, if you work in a normal corporation or a normal business, a big business that has a substantial number of employees, they have some sort of orientation that kind of goes over this, and they have some sort of grievance process, and they introduce you to the human resource department where you go and make a grievance. But you also report into the same office every day. When you're trucking, you're there for 3 or 4 or 5 days, and you may never come there again for 2 months. Therefore, you never meet anybody that you work with. You don't know where any of the offices are. You don't get to know anybody. You don't have any connection. So you're just like a lost little lamb wandering around, and people say they're going to help you and they're going to point you in the right direction, and they never do. So, even though there's a couple nice people in this company that if they found out something bad was happening to you and they would help you, how do you find them? How do you locate them if you don't know anyone? If you reported it to one of those people, they would help you. But it takes time to get to know who will help you. Obviously, the people that were there when you were there, Tracy, are not there anymore. And I want to say that it's a big risk to announce people's names, like because at Covenant, I met people that were fired from Covenant for being too nice to the drivers.
I can believe that.
Yeah. That's not acceptable. So that's how much you need to know that you need to watch out for yourself. And if you do find somebody that's an ally, you need to keep it under your hat, because it's just not something you want everybody to know that somebody's helping you. And that's really scary. Giselle is from a law firm. They've been trying to get a hold of women who have recently had experiences with CRST post the CRST case. Has anything really changed? From my conversations today, no, it's not. It's not, and something we can touch on with Tracy again. Is it an evil empire? I don't think that it is, because there's so much
stifling of the truth from at the bottom level. So people sort of walk around in la-la land, not knowing what's going on. But there's a lot of levels of management that buffer them and insulate them from knowing what's going on. And Tracy, you and I have had this conversation before with about the executives. When you try to confront them with something, what was your experience?
Well, you know, as far as up as I went was safety, and you know who I'm talking about. And they basically kind of made me feel like it was in my head, that this wasn't really going on. It wasn't a bad thing. It, you know, that although they put me with this criminal, known criminal, past criminal, yes, he served his time, all that stuff, but I should have had the choice. I should have known. And they were like, no, he's done his time, and it should all be good. And I don't think that that's how you should look at it. But they knew, this gentleman in particular knew I was struggling, knew I was having problems, yet he kept his mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is in the blog somewhere. It's not put out there with whom I'm speaking about, and I will keep his name out of it in a public forum, but it is available in private. And I haven't, you know, he apologized to me after the fact, after he left the company. He apologized. Mm-hmm. So he knew exactly what was going on and let it continue, even though I had been in his office more than once.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's like they feel like they're going to have the promise of a better career path if they keep the secrets of the company when they know they're doing something wrong to the individual. And I think part of my driving force was to go meet some of these people face to face and let their conscience start keeping them up at night. And I think that that happened with you too, that maybe somebody that could have handled your situation differently, over time, their conscience made them just go, I can't work for this company anymore. I know that people have gotten hurt because of my silence. And I believe that to be true.
Yeah, I do believe that that's why he's no longer with the company, that because he did eventually open his eyes and say, you know, I can't support this anymore.
Mhm. Yeah. No, and it's sad that, you know, people have to get to that point in their personal professional career to go, well, I'm moving up the ladder, but I see that the consequence of that is that I'm hurting people, decent people, that don't deserve to be stamped on. And I experience that a lot at Covenant. And with every one of them that left and has reached out to me after the fact, I feel like good. And I think that I did something. It, to me, it's an achievement. So, Mindy, I'm going to go back to you because you're switching carriers now. And how far are you into this new carrier?
Went through orientation. Lauren and I have each been on the road since Tuesday of last week. So we have to 175 hours we have to do. It's kind of frustrating because we'd already done each like 200 hours with Covenant, but and we were like 2 weeks away from finishing up, but I said just couldn't stay. So basically we have about 3 to 4 more weeks to go.
Okay. So they picked up the training hours from where it left off then.
No, they didn't. That's what I said. They didn't give
start
us any
from,
credit.
Oh, they didn't. You
yeah.
start from square one.
Yep.
Okay. Well, hopefully you learned more.
There's definitely some of the things that the other trainer at Covenant did was just unbelievable as far as, so we're definitely, and again, so on one hand, we look at, we could be all sour grapes about what happened at Covenant and rightfully so, but on the other hand, we're choosing to look at it as at least now we have a better idea of what to look for, what to expect, what to demand. And we've each had those conversations with our, with our respective trainers and have said, okay, this is what I expect you to teach me. And I'll hold you accountable. You hold me accountable,
mm-hmm.
So far it seems to be going, okay. Like I said, much better. We are actually learning. I seem to have a trainer that, actually gives a flip about
yeah.
me learning as opposed to how much money he's earning.
Right. That's good. That's really good. Well, I mean, I'm sorry that happened to you there, but I warned you.
Well, and you're right. And like I said, part of it, you're right. We were warned. And when you're just like everybody else is, when you go into this, half of it is you're between a rock and a hard place usually. Okay. You need the job. You need to make it through this, like someone said, you just need to hang on for the 28, the 48, however many days it
yeah.
is you got to hold on for, right? And
yeah.
so, you just figure if you just put on your big girl pants, right, and stick it out and you can do this. But at some point, yeah, you do realize it's not just about sticking it out. It really is life and death.
Yeah.
And even though in your mind you know this, going in, it doesn't become real until it's real, okay?
Yeah.
And then like I said, the good thing is having gone through that with Covenant, my daughter being young, she's only 22, at least now she knows her way around truck stops. She knows things to look for. So she did get an education of sorts, okay? And I was there. We were there to kind of bounce each other's, not that I shielded her or what have you, but we were there to at least have each other's backs. So she is aware of a lot more than she would be if she'd had to go out and go do this on her own.
Mm-hmm.
So she feels more comfortable, more confident. She's more aware of what to look out for. So am I. And we know that, once we make it through this, then we'll go, and we are a team. There's a reason why we're doing team as opposed to solo. So we can look out for each other. That's the bigger reason, especially being female.
Yeah, I agree.
Things have come a long way, but they're still not where they need to be as far as for making this a female-friendly position, not by a long shot. So, but we feel like we're hopefully part of the solution, not the problem.
I think you are part of the solution because, they always try to paint you as, if you're a single woman entering, they try to paint you as unstable and, there's something wrong with you and that's why this happened. And then, here you are, you're a mother and a daughter and there hasn't been anything except really the safety issues of this person breaking the company policies on training. And persistently doing it, and just not wanting to, and they are just letting him proceed. It's you have to know the magic word, and the magic word is I don't feel safe on this truck. And they do handle you, and this is the same. You were saying how they're trying to make it seem like it's your fault. That's what happens in some of these other cases. They try to talk to you in a way that shifts the blame to you, that sort of, it's like a criminal defense attorney talking to you in a way that makes you feel like you've got to defend yourself for something that seems obviously that, you know, you were wrong, and all of a sudden you're defending yourself. And it's all about moving that load forward. You know, that's sort of the end game all of the time.
Right. It always comes down to the money.
Yeah, it does. So Giselle is from the law firm of Joshua Friedman, the law offices of Joshua Friedman. They are located in New York, and they're eager to talk to anyone who has had a recent experience, especially with CRST, but they're gaining a lot of knowledge, learning what's going on at some of the training carriers, at other training carriers that are using the same business model. The opportunity for you to speak to an attorney who is knowledgeable about sexual harassment and trucking, these are people that you can call. You can talk to them confidentially and let them know what's going on. I know it's really hard for women to come forward, especially in trucking. They feel like they're being stupid or silly or, you know, too emotional. And I understand other women will make you feel like you're being a baby or, you know, put on your big girl panties and all of this. Some of these cases are very serious. There have been cases where people have been raped and beat up pretty badly. So it does not help when some other woman is saying, that never happened to me. So, you know, put your big girl panties on. That does not help the situation. If you want to get a hold of their offices, you can get a hold of me for their number. And they have a website. That's Joshua Friedman ESQ, that stands for Esquire.com. If you don't know how to spell that, that's JOSHUAFRIEDMANESQ.com. The number is 888-369-1119. Giselle, are you still on there? Would you like to ask a question of the group or anything? I was hoping Carol was going to come on, but she said she would, but then I haven't seen her come on.
Sure. Well, I did want to say thank you so much to all of you for letting me listen in and learn a little bit from the experiences that you've had. It's really, really valuable because obviously you guys are, you're the experts in this industry, you know, not us. you know what it's like on the ground, and that's invaluable. And I wanted to mention, just like Desiree said, if anyone would like to speak with us just to get questions answered, there's no obligation to do anything, even if you speak with an attorney about experiences you've had. It's our job to give you legal advice and consultation about what your rights are, and we're always very happy to do that. I'm extension 8 at the number that she mentioned, and you're welcome to call me anytime. Joshua Friedman of our firm is extension 4 if you want to reach him. And yeah, we would certainly love to speak with anyone who has had experiences at CRST or at Covenant, at CR England, at any of the training carriers that they feel uncomfortable with. We're happy to give you a little bit of knowledge about the legal side of things.
There is a statute of limitations on some of these cases, isn't there? What's your advice?
That's correct.
To somebody that's experienced something.
Sure. Well, without, you know, I can't give individual legal advice to anyone on this call because part of the obligation we have as attorneys is to be keeping confidentiality with our clients or anyone who is seeking advice from us. So without kind of making it specific, yeah, that's definitely true. When people want to pursue sexual harassment claims or other kind of sex discrimination claims in court, they only have a limited amount of time to file what's called an EEOC charge. That's a document that lets the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission know that they feel they were experiencing sex discrimination at work. The EEOC has an obligation to look into those things, and then at the end of a certain amount of time, they give you a letter saying, yes, you can go ahead and pursue your claim in court if you would like to. We've had our chance to investigate. That sets the clock kind of running, and then if you want to pursue legal action against your employer, you need to do it within a certain amount of time after that. So it is, it's time sensitive. You know, there are claims that are over a certain amount of time old will just expire, and you won't have the right to bring those claims in court, even if something pretty bad happened to you. So I would just say for anyone who's thinking about what their options are or even just wants to know, speak with some other attorney, doesn't have to be us or with us, sooner rather than later, just so that you know when your claims might be expiring.
Okay. I have on our website that there's 120 days that you have to file with the EEOC, and I know that number's been used against some people in trucking companies because they say we're in, you know, make a complaint and then somebody's investigating it and you don't really know if you turn in a complaint and you think somebody's investigating it and you find out nobody's investigating it. To me, it seems like they're sort of milking out that 120 days and they're not really doing anything, but they lead you to believe that they are. So you kind of need to decide, like, if this is really a horrible thing that happened to you, maybe you should just file it because that time is expiring. And I've heard from several women that they just sort of milked them out during this period and then cut them loose or something happened where they separated from the carrier sometimes.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. Just to make sure everyone knows, sometimes that time period to file an EEOC charge is 180 days, and sometimes it's actually 300 days. It actually depends on what state you're in, which EEOC office you're filing with. So you may actually have more time than you think. Don't completely lose hope if you're worried about, you know, 180 days and losing your chance. Also,
and that's sort of your ticket to the next step, right, to get a lawyer is say, yes, I did file a formal complaint with the EEOC. Is that
come to, even if you walk in and you're like, I have absolutely no idea what to do, but this bad thing happened to me at work, what are my options? They should be able to help walk you through that process of filing an EEOC charge. It absolutely is something you can do on your own. The EEOC has offices you can walk into or you can call them, and they should be able to help you. But also any good attorney should be able to help do that with you. You don't have to already have it done before you speak with an attorney.
Okay, so it's not – you can get in touch with a lawyer before you do that stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of attorneys will be happy to speak with you at that point because they might have advice for you about how to write down that charge, how to explain what happened to you that might be helpful.
If somebody came to you and they said, and you said to them, well, where did you report this to? And they said, I reported it to my dispatcher. And you said, did you report it to your human resource department? And they said, what's that? Is that another obstacle that would appear to be like, well, this is a kind of chain of command. Why didn't you know that?
I would say, you know, every employer is different. Every chain of command is different. And it's certainly not true that you should feel, oh, well, I didn't, you know, report all the way up to the top person at my company, so I'm out of luck. That's definitely not true. There are a lot of legal doctrines covering whether or not you have put the company what's called on notice of harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of different ways a company can become on notice. Sometimes it's because you complain to someone who is charged by the company with taking care of complaints. Sometimes it's because managers at the company were around and they were hearing harassment happening and they didn't do anything about it. There can be lots of ways it can happen. So that's, again, something where, you know, don't worry or conclude, like, maybe I just didn't do enough and not speak to an attorney because of that fear, because an attorney will know kind of what questions to ask to figure out whether the company was on notice one way or another.
Okay. So that's kind of what you're getting at, is clarifying that they knew this is happening. So it's not a very good idea to make a verbal complaint.
Well, that's not even necessarily true. You know, it's complaining. It's hard to make generalizations about any of this stuff because it completely depends on people's individual situation, obviously. But verbal complaints are complaints. Absolutely. Written complaints are complaints. Complaints through Qualcomm are complaints. You know, there are a lot of ways you could do it, and they all count. It's not that one of them doesn't count.
Okay. All right. Does anybody have any additional questions or concerns or comments they want to share?
They don't have any female trainer.
I can't hear you very well. Can you talk a little louder?
Yeah, I'm like, they don't have a female trainer. How come only the men they train?
They have female trainers. I have been a trainer before. I was a trainer at CRST, and I have been a trainer at USA Truck.
Yeah.
So they do have female trainers.
Because I'm starting on 26 for the Swift. That's why I asked them to have a female trainer instead of male. So this all has been avoided for sexual harassment. That's what I meant.
Usually there are very few female trainers, and a lot of times they tell you if you choose to only go with a female, you are going to have to wait. So most people choose to have whatever is available.
Oh.
Did you pick a training carrier specifically already?
Yes.
Was it USA?
No, for a Swift company.
For Swift, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in general.
I already asked them a month ago, so my creator, she said she put me for a female trainer.
Yeah. Just in general, there are just very few female trainers that are in existence at all. And, I wish there was more, but there's really no guarantee that the female trainer is going to be a good trainer. I had a female trainer, and she wasn't that great. There were some things about her that were very unprofessional. So that's really not a guarantee that you're going to get a safe and responsible training experience. But it is more about respecting the person that you are with. If you get a good trainer that's actually trying to teach you something, be respectful of them. That's their house. They live in it. But if it's somebody that's taking advantage of you in an inappropriate way, know how to protect yourself and report it. And Tracy's experienced both parts of this. She's been taken advantage of as a student, and she's been taken advantage of as a trainer with students that were not trying to bring their best to the training experience. But I wouldn't rule out male trainers, because there are some really good ones.
I don't know.
It's unfortunately a crapshoot right now. And the reason why is because they recruit more students then they can provide qualified trainers. And there's nothing to stop them from doing that. There's no caps to prevent them from
hiring more students than they can provide a safe training experience for?
At this particular juncture, Desiree, I just want to advise this attorney. You mentioned Bitsy in the beginning of our intro, and this was something that has been going on since the late 1970s, and Bitsy referred to it as the sleeper test, and she stood up against that, and that's probably one of the, she's probably one of the front runners of the fact that you had to, you could actually complain about it and get some kind of resolve. But it's not something that's new. It's been going on in the industry for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, this is not a new thing. It's a thing that's been going on for a long time that not very many people have talked about.
And it's an unsolved problem.
As far as talking about it, I know when I first got home from being taken off my trainer's truck, when I finally got someone to listen to me, I called a couple of different lawyers, and they all told me I should have called the police and that CRST was too big and they didn't want to deal with it. One of them did give me the 800 number to the EEOC. I called them. Every time I called, all I ever got was an answering machine. And I had left messages. When the EEOC did get back a hold of me and they asked for any paperwork that I had pertaining to that time, I sent them my logbook. I had wrote their phone number on the logbook, and they had asked about it, and I told them, I'd called you several times, left messages. No one ever answered the phone. I know that the first lawyer that I had called when I got home, he was real big on why didn't you call the police when he assaulted you. I guess I didn't look at it as assault. Yes, he slapped me so hard, he bruised me and left welts on my body. I don't know why I didn't think of it as assault. All I thought about was I just want to go home.
Wow.
That was my experience with attorneys, but then it's been 10 years. So that's kind of how that happened.
Really, it's just a lot of confusion in the beginning. A lot of people just confused about what's going on when they arrive there on the bus. And that's what we're trying to help people understand. When you get there on the bus, you need to have your antennas up, not your guard down. And collect as many contacts and pieces of information you can because you might need them later. So with that, we're going to wrap up this conference. And I want to thank everybody for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
I hope everybody will take the time to go on our Facebook page and read about Bitsy Gomez, because she did stick up for a lot of people back in the 70s. Had a lot of personal loss to herself and her family, and not very many people realize that she stuck up for a lot of people that don't even know her name today in trucking, especially trucking women. And I would like that to change, and I would like for us to help solve the problem that she brought to the forefront back in the late 1970s. So all right, everybody, be safe out there, and I'll see you out on the road.
Thank you.
All right, good night.
Good night.